we're all going to die, it's obvious that when and how don't matter.
Welcome to Banned Book Club. We're your hosts, Nick
and Rafaela.
And today we are talking about The Stranger by Albert Camus. So I know a lot of people don't even like to read in the first place. And even if you do, this is not a fun book.
No, not at all.
It's beautiful and stylishly written, but it is definitely not an enjoyable read in the traditional sense. This is a existential dark night of the soul that ends in the night. But I hope by the end of this episode, people listening at least will understand how important this book is. I mean, I've heard a lot of the times people saying stuff like, books don't really change anything, they don't matter that much. But the ideas in this book, a lot of isms, existentialism, nihilism,
absurdism,
moral relativism, all these isms that just sound like fancy things kids would be talking about in the quad at college, are actually the things that have shaped the world we live in today. In fact, these ideas are so pervasive, all those isms I just listed, that even if people don't know about them or haven't read this book, it's likely that some half-baked jumble of these ideas are going to be the default position that most people today look at the whole world.
Yeah, you'll categorize yourself in one of these isms if you didn't know it already.
So it's at least worth understanding that part of this book, even if it's not enjoyable in the first place. But let's talk about the man.
Yeah, just a little background
on
Camus. So he was a French philosopher, an author, and a journalist. He actually spent half his life being a journalist in World War II. He was awarded the 1957 Nobel Prize in Literature at the age of 44, and he was actually the second youngest recipient in history. Something interesting about him winning the Nobel Prize for The Stranger was that year he actually beat an author that we really like, a Greek author, actually.
Kazantzakis.
Yes, Nikos Kazantzakis. For The Last Temptation of Christ, he lost by one vote, and The Stranger won.
The funny thing is, I think he rejected the award, too.
Yeah, so really, Camus did, so. Nico should have taken it, but
I mean, what a cool existential move, rejecting the Nobel Prize.
I know, right?
I think it's also interesting to note that Camus, I mean, like you said, he was a philosopher, but he's been quoted saying that he thought that was a ridiculous term to use in reference to him, because he didn't believe sufficiently in reason to believe on in a system based on it. So he basically rejects all of philosophy while being a philosopher at the same time.
He also didn't like that people called this book existentialist.
Yeah, that's another term that
really
he,
upset him, even though it does bear that.
He kind of sounds like that kid at school that's like too cool for any label you give him.
You know what he is? He's the nonconformist in South Park.
Oh, yeah. Again, you think these ideas don't matter. This spawned all of the goth stuff, the punk stuff, the rebellious
stuff. This is the guide to being goth.
Yeah. Any guy you've seen at a cafe smoking a cigarette and just philosophizing, it's, you can thank Camus.
Thanks, Camus.
But what is this story in a nutshell?
Yeah, it was, and just so we have a time frame, it was published in 1942, and it was known as one of his finest works of literature, and it was only published, only 4,400 copies actually were published, and it was released during the Nazi occupation of France. He was actually in the middle of writing this book while fleeing the Nazis. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm sure some inspiration came. But essentially this book, it's a simple story. It's broken up into two parts. There's the first part where he has a...
Well, we should say he is Meursault. That's the main character who's this unassuming businessman. He seems to be the most apathetic person you've ever seen in a book.
He's definitely an atheist. He's pretty nihilistic. And he thinks life is absurd.
Which is kind of encapsulated in the very first line of this book, where it says, "Maman died yesterday," but then he doesn't even remember exactly when, even.
It says, the first line in the book is, "Mother died today, or maybe yesterday. I can't be sure."
Yeah, and that shows you how little he cares right there. I think that was brilliant writing.
Just a fun fact. In French, which is what this book was originally written in, it's "Aujourd'hui, maman est morte." I'm using some of my French that I took for years, which translates exact to "today, mom is dead," which maman is more like mom. It's not so much mother. So it has a little bit of a personality to it. But as the years went on, a lot of different people tried to translate it, and they just kept changing it. So really it should be "today, mother or mom is dead." So I thought that was interesting that they could never really translate it properly.
So you have that as an opening line, which is kind of a punch
here
in the gut.
He doesn't care, yeah.
And the first, third of this book is spent showing basically how indifferent Meursault is to the death of his mother.
He has a job. He doesn't really care. He goes to her funeral. He's thinking about whether or not he should smoke and whether that would upset anybody. But then again, he doesn't really care if it does.
And the whole time while he's at the funeral parlor and even right next to his mother's corpse, you see that Meursault is more concerned with like sounding awkward to his boss or when or where he can smoke or just more annoyed even by regular things people do, like people coughing.
It's outdoors too, and it's really sunny and hot, and he's so annoyed by the sun.
The sun is a major part of this book, and we're gonna get to that later. But
it's not usually something you would think of at your mom's funeral. But there is a very touching moment where his mom had at the nursing home, whatever she was at, had kind of like a little boyfriend. And it's really the only moment in the whole book where you have somebody that actually acts like a human being. It's Thomas Perez, and that's the boyfriend. And he's like bringing flowers, and he's so sad, and he's crying, and he misses her so much. And
it contrasts with Meursault, who clearly doesn't care at all. But Camus uses this thread with the mother in two ways. I mean, first off, it's a brilliant introduction to Meursault's character, how indifferent he is, into this setting. I guess it's somewhere in France or Europe.
They're in Algiers.
Oh, Algiers.
Which is pretty important.
Yeah, and it's this beautiful place, but it's the same time stifling and kind of oppressive. So it's doing all that, and it's also setting up the thing that's going to bite Meursault in the butt at the end of this story when he goes on trial. And to sum up the rest of the book quickly, he ends up shooting a guy on the beach basically out of the same indifference.
He's trying to help his friend
that we see from the beginning,
who thinks his mistress is cheating around, and then her brother, they come face to face on a beach, and he ends up getting in a fight, and Meursault just happens to have a gun with him, and he just decides, why don't I just shoot this guy? And not only does he shoot the Arab guy, after he dies, he continues to shoot him four more times.
And that gets him embroiled in this big legal case. And the last third of the book is pretty much his trial.
And it's not just
the main thing that's used against him in this trial, at least the main thing that seems to sway the jury, is
his character.
Lawyer pointing back to how Meursault acted after the death of his mother in the beginning of this book, how little he cared, how inhuman he was.
It's not even about the crime anymore. It's about his character. His character is on trial.
Right. So it comes full circle with the maman from the beginning.
Poor maman.
And he ends up being executed, I guess we can presume. for his crimes.
Not just executed. I'm pretty sure he gets his head chopped off, right?
In the guillotine, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty brutal. So this book obviously explores some very deep ideas. I mean, morality and, you know, does life have meaning and all these different symbols that pop up in the book. So
it also kind of takes aim at religion, which mm-hmm. we should mention
specifically
is probably the main reason why this book is controversial and why it's banned, even still continues to be challenged. Even back in as recent as 2016 in Texas, there were some charter schools challenging this book and the curriculum because it was, quote, violent, horrific, and offensive to religious sensitivities.
Yeah.
Which I think, I don't think you should condemn the book, definitely read it, but I mean, that's kind of accurate to this story. I mean, mm-hmm. This book and the ideas in it it really represents an existential threat in itself to all the ideas that make up Judeo-Christian Westernism and how someone like Meursault would be a stranger in that kind of world. I mean, he's basically taking aim at everything, all the ideas that hold up our society, or are supposed to at least.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Before we continue, a quick interruption. Want to purchase the book we're discussing in this episode? Well, check out Bookshop. Bookshop is an online bookstore with a mission to financially support local independent bookstores. As more and more people buy their books online, Bookshop has created an easy, convenient way for you to get your books and support bookstores at the same time. Bookshop will give away over 75% of their profit margin to stores, publications, and authors. If you want to shop the books we've covered on the podcast, visit the link down below in the description. We do receive a small commission based on sales, so thank you for all your support of our channel and podcast. Right, and it's cool that it's done in this fictional story. It's not so much a regular philosophy book where you're just listening to his ideas. It's told in this story that feels pretty real. And at the end, you know, as cheesy as it is, his soul is on trial here.
And Camus said himself, a novel is never anything but a philosophy put into images.
That's not a bad quote.
Yeah. But he's not just a dry philosopher, because if you've read philosophy, that it can be pretty tough to read sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this is more than just like a philosophical lesson. This is a beautifully written, stylistic piece. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, too, for a guy coming out of the French tradition, the style he uses for this book, it's more of a American, tough guy, Hemingway, short lines kind of style. He doesn't spend a lot of time or feeling on anything, and that for me worked so well with the character and the plot mirroring what was going on.
What's also interesting is not that he invented this new way of thinking. I mean, in a way he did with absurdism, but these ideas have been around for centuries. It just got renewed, and I think all of this has to do with, like we've talked about, is postmodernism and after World War One and Two, with this book coming out and ideas like this starting to come up and be challenged.
Yeah, well, let's talk about absurdism a little bit, because that's probably the core idea of this book. If you're interested in that idea also, you could check out Camus' Myth of Sisyphus, where he lays it out a little bit more clearly. But what is absurdism for people who don't know? I think to explain it best, you have to go all the way back to a philosopher named Soren Kierkegaard, who started this tradition of existentialism. Basically, the idea that there is no concrete scientific objective meaning to life that you can pin down, and you kind of have to decide what that is for yourself. I mean, that's a watered-down version of it. But what's interesting is Kierkegaard, the father of that idea, the father of existentialism, went to that point with it, there is no objective truth, but then continued on a little bit further and said, even though life is meaningless, life is absurd, you should still have faith, have a value system, that have ethics that you strive to live by. Mm-hmm. And then his idea gets run with later by other big-time philosophers, Nietzsche, Foucault, Jean-Paul Sartre, Karl Marx, who, again, they pick up Kierkegaard's existentialism, mm-hmm. but they remove the faith piece from it at the end, the religious piece, the values piece, and it's stuck pretty much with, life has no meaning, and that's kind of it. So you just make up your own meaning, mm-hmm. Or kill yourself, basically. And this is the crowd that Camus kind of in, except his absurdism has more of a focus on the idea that life, people are born with this inherent desire for meaning that life never really answers back. He says, the world is silent towards people's desire for meaning, and that to him was absurd.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter whatever choice you made in life, it wasn't really going to affect the end result.
Yeah, and we see Marceau echoing that sentiment, sometimes literally the way you said mm-hmm. it, a ton of times in the book when he's thinking about doing this or that, he'll just say, oh, then I realized it didn't matter. Even when he's asked to be married.
His girlfriend actually proposes to him, and he's like, no, what's the difference if we're married or not? So,
yeah, and she says, oh, I don't like that, but you're kind of weird, and maybe that's why I love you. And
funny that he would write that one.
Yeah, I don't think she knew what she was getting into.
Absolutely not.
It's interesting, this idea of absurdism, and it's a pretty bleak outlook on life. I don't know what you do with it if you actually try to live that way, but Camus offered three, what he called, responses to absurdism, how you can fight it.
Before we continue, just a quick interruption. Are you enjoying this episode? If you are, go ahead and like and subscribe. If you have anything to add to the discussion, go ahead and comment down below. Now, back to the episode.
Responses to absurdism, how you can fight it. And his first one, ever the cheery guy, he said, just kill yourself. It's suicide. The second option was just continue to live for no other reason, just to spite the absurdity of life. Mm-hmm. And the third reason kind of starts to circle back to Kierkegaard from the beginning. It's live with a system of ethics, some kind of faith, some sort of belief. Even though it's not real, live with it just to give structure and meaning to your life. But Marceau never adopts any of this in the book. He sticks to his kind of nihilistic outlook on things to the end.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth mentioning that, as you know, just to kind of, before we get into the big ideas, he's on this trial and a chaplain comes in the room and is basically trying to say, it's time for you to basically feel the power of Christ. I mean, he is really trying to convert him here and tell him, you know, God is real, and how could you be this way? And Marceau is just completely denying it all. And I think that's the wrong way to go about it in general, to try to scare people into it.
I don't think he denies it so much as he's just
shocked. He's indifferent shocked that he feels that way.
And I remember him saying that he was just a little bit annoyed by the guy, but that he it was just something he didn't think was worth thinking about.
Yes. But at the very end, I thought this was an interesting way. I mean, even though he has no hope that once he's going to die in the end here, there is nothing left. So what's the point? But I just wanted to read the ending line of the book, and it says, "As if that blind rage had washed me clean, rid me of hope, for the first time in that night, alive with signs and stars, I opened myself to the gentle indifference of the world, finding it so much like myself, so like a brother, really. I felt that I had been happy and that I was happy again. For everything to be consummated, for me to feel less alone, I had only to wish that there be a large crowd of spectators the day of my execution and that they greet me with cries of hate." And that line, I don't know, the ending saying he only wishes that he wasn't alone and that there was a crowd there to watch him die. And I think that just gave, I mean, I know it kind of ends with no hope and not a lot of answers, but even somebody like Meursault, as twisted as this is, kind of wanted people there with him.
Yeah, it kind of humanizes him a little bit at the end there.
And it makes me wonder, you know, did he feel any remorse for killing the Arab?
I think it's safe to say that he didn't.
I think he didn't either, but it's still interesting that he gets so angry about everything. And I think sometimes when people are upset with what, you know, the way they're living their life or the choice they made, and, you know, you get really angry or you shut it down, I just find that is like obviously something is bothering him.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that more later because I think there is something of a moralist in Meursault that you see just little hints of throughout the book. But in terms of him being remorseful for the murder,
no,
I think he puts his chips on the table in that part where he's talking about death and the meaninglessness of death. He says something like, if I died today or if I died 20 years from now or if someone dies alone or dies poor or rich or young or old, it doesn't matter. So mm-hmm. I don't think he puts a lot of value on prolonging human life. It's just meaningless to him, isn't that the definition of a psychopath or a...
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He definitely has psychopath qualities. But one thing that I think Camus does that shows a little bit of he is thinking about maybe God, maybe something out there, is his use of the sun. Because anytime anything in the book happens where it's more serious or he's
the heat turns up and the whole scene
turns up and it's almost like a big camera is just watching him and it's just making him sweat and that sun is in the sky.
Yeah, and even the language he uses, he doesn't just say sun, light, a bright day. He says stuff like oppressive heat, oppressive light, light going into his eyes like a blade. I mean, it's like a violent, overpowering thing for him.
Oh, for sure. But it's not just, oh, it's hot outside. No, so, it obviously had meaning behind him choosing to use the sun anytime he was uncomfortable. Obviously, these things made him uncomfortable, and he just didn't know how to act.
So a lot of people have talked about this motif in the book, the sun. You interpreted that as God, or what did you think it
maybe
was supposed to be?
Not necessarily God or a God, but it was almost like his self asking himself, like, okay, what do I think about this thing? So I'm uncomfortable. Why?
We can say for sure he only heightens the sun, the light, the heat stuff when Meursault is being confronted by something. Would you agree with that in the book?
Yeah, it's anytime there's some kind of chaotic thing happening.
And an interesting thing I noticed too was the descriptions of the sun and the heat are a lot of times accompanied by descriptions of bugs, flies on his face, mm-hmm. wasps banging against like a glass window trying to get out.
I mean, it's literally like something knocking.
Yeah, I don't know for sure what that's supposed to be. It was kind of a hellish image at sometimes, like bugs and heat and fire and light. Or maybe, I don't know, this might be a leap, but it's
that
like
might be a leap.
The light of truly seeing things, or like the light
it's
of...
It's like shining a light on what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, you do get the sense, the way Camus writes Meursault versus the everyday people in this book, that it's kind of like the show Invader Zim, where all the regular people were basically animals or like in a coma almost, just sitting on their couches. Like they weren't awake. People are always sleeping and eating and burping and coughing. And it seems like they're in this unconscious sleep state beside Meursault, who maybe knows something they don't. I don't know. Is that a stretch, do you think, for the sun stuff?
I don't think it's a stretch. I mean, again, we won't know for sure what Camus really wanted us to think, but that's how I interpreted it. And it may be wrong and it may be right, but who really cares? One thing that's interesting is, you know how Camus died?
No.
He got in a car accident and wrapped his car around a tree and died. And he was pretty young. Which I thought was actually a very poetic death for this guy.
Why is that?
I mean, it was just a random way to die. Very absurd. It does show you that life is absurd. And yes, I think people try to find meaning. People will always try to find some kind of truth. Because if you do just live your life and think, well, anything can happen any day and it doesn't matter with what choice I make, life's going to go one way. But that's just how I...
Well, again, we're a book channel. We're not
a philosophy,
people. We're not Harvard scholars or anything. But
definitely
just from my layman's view of things.
Since I am a recent college grad, we are recent college grads.
Do you get the feeling that all this, absurdism, nothing matters, why bother stuff is just kind of an intellectual cop-out for, I don't know, some goth kid or someone who's just a little bit frustrated with life? Because everyone who I've ever heard pitch this philosophy to me was still here alive talking in my face, working a job, living life, going out to get food.
Even Camus was in a job.
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of the part I'm having trouble justifying is, okay, you're making a whole worldview based off of the idea that everything is stupid, nothing matters. But isn't even that kind of imposing some sense of meaning onto things, just saying like, oh yeah, the meaning of this is it's meaningless. Like, isn't that a meaning in itself? And even if you think that's true, you're still continuing to live.
I think, Camus says embrace the absurdity. Okay, fine. I don't feel comforted by that. I don't feel good.
Well, I think it's important to say,
it doesn't feel right.
We should be willing to face anything that's true, no matter how uncomforting it is. I mean, I would like to think I'd like to know and embrace something that's true, even if it was really uncomfortable for me to do that. But I just don't know if this is as solid as a lot of people might take it to be.
And don't get me wrong. I believe life is suffering. Life is not meant to be easy and optimistic and like if I do all the right things, always, I'm going to always have the right things come back to me and positive vibes only. No, it's not, oh, if I release my good vibes, the good vibes will come back. It don't matter. I could get cancer and die. But that is the point of life. Even though you know anything could happen to you one day, that you're almost out of control of your own life, you still have to have some sense of purpose. And no matter what people say, you're always looking for some kind of a truth. And like you said, even though you say, you know, life is meaningless, doesn't that kind of give it meaning? Everybody tries in one way or the other to seek the truth.
Well, I'm not saying it gives it meaning. I don't think they're going that far. I'm just saying you're still imposing some kind of logic, some kind of observation onto a universe that you're saying is illogical, irrational, nonsensical. And okay, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but in terms of just utility, how useful of an idea is that if you just leave everybody there at the point where you know, all bets are off, is do whatever you want, make your own meaning. I mean, and I'm not saying this as if I have the answer. I'm saying, like, honestly, a question, how this has worked out in America, in Western society, right, since World War I, pretty much. Do you think this has been a hurtful or a helpful idea? Because the fact is, people have embraced this, whether they're conscious of it or not. It's just this, everything is, you do you, you live your truth, this moral relativism.
Yeah, but my truth could be, I like to saw babies in half.
Yeah, and I think Rousseau's answer to that would be like, sure, why not? I mean.
Yeah, I know, and that's the thing. Everybody will try to find some kind of meaning in their life, and it can, I mean, this is me from my own personal opinion, my own views, that not everybody's meaning that they try to create is necessarily the right meaning. Because you can take people from history who have tried to do this on their own, like let's just take Hitler or someone worse.
All people, by the way, that those philosophers we were talking about in the beginning, they were fans of their ideas.
Yeah. So, okay, that was meaning. He chose to have that meaning in his life, and that was his belief. He was doing him. And look where it got him. Obviously, there was something wrong. And everybody knows deep in their heart when something is wrong. And it's not just because society says so. I believe everybody has that feeling in them of, this just doesn't feel right. And it's what makes you make decisions.
Well, this comes back to kind of the cornerstone idea of existentialism, which is, it's summed up in the phrase, essence precedes, or existence precedes essence. So a translation of that is, there is nothing that's objectively true that comes before your own existence. You make up the truth. So if, I guess the answer, this is not a question we're going to solve, but is there something beyond us, something external to us that's true? Because if there's not, then maybe Camus, Rousseau are right about all this stuff. I mean,
well, it's like in your life, what are you working towards? What ending are you working towards? Who is going to hold you accountable for your actions? And so, you know, is there something outside of yourself? I'd like to say I believe so.
Another thing that's interesting to me about that point is, if you do a little research about Camus, he was a big-time humanist and a guy that was, I don't know if he was active in politics, but
he hated the war.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time writing anti-war articles. So this guy clearly had some sort of moral backbone. And
I think it was something about his father fought in World War I and was discharged because he got sick or injured himself or had tuberculosis, something like that. And he thought that was really unfair because he believed his father was strong enough and could keep going, and it wasn't fair that he got sick from the war.
Yeah, and I mean that all makes sense to me. The only part that doesn't that I'm having trouble reconciling is Camus is selling this absurdism stuff, and then at the same time he seems to have his own pretty defined moral system. And I get that he says, like we talked about earlier, one of the answers to the absurdity of life is make up your own system of ethics and live by that. But what would make one better than the other? What would make his better than sawing babies in half, like you said? Not that I'm saying it's not better than sawing babies in half, but I mean, he's
what
a philosopher.
What makes
you
draw that line?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Where does that come from?
What criterion is he falling back on to make a judgment after you've already said there's no truth to anything? And that's what I think is ultimately dangerous and sad about this idea. At least if people don't take it with a huge grain of salt. Because otherwise, you get what we have today. All these young people, no values, just drifting along, absorbing whatever they get from Reddit in this real crisis of meaning. And yeah, I mean, that's the stranger. It's sure, nothing really matters. So if a whole society absorbed that, they would look like this.
Yeah, you don't belong to anything. And if you do take this book to heart, then really what better thing is there to do with your life other than to end it?
I know. That's the brutal ultimatum of this idea. And I think if anyone's out there listening, you should read this book for no other reason than it gives you a hard, unglamorous look of what living a life like that leads to. And I guess depending on what you believe, you'll take the ending of this book where Meursault dies pretty much for nothing as either something heroic or something tragic, but you at least should give it the time of day to see how bad following this idea could be, how unglamorous it could get.
Right.
I mean, he ends up in prison. He ends up alone. One of the more human parts you see of Meursault is he's missing his girlfriend at least for a little bit while he's in prison. He's thinking about his mom.
Yeah, he thinks about her.
Yeah, that's the only time he thinks about his mom too. And he's like, I understand why she wanted to get remarried. And, but yeah, that no one comes to visit him, and he gets his head chopped off. So,
and he wishes there was an audience to watch it, just so he could feel less alone.
Yeah.
So I really think that Camus did explore this new idea, but gave some hints that he was thinking about perhaps a higher power, morality, maybe sin. I don't know.
But do you think at the end of the day, whatever intentions Camus had, because he doesn't seem to be a nihilist when you look into him, but regardless of his intentions, do you think this book ends up being just something that inspires nihilism in confused readers?
Is that
what it's going to do 9 times out of 10? Because
yeah.
Honestly, that's how I felt when I read it in high school.
I think so.
I thought Meursault was cool. Like, oh, he doesn't care about anything. Awesome. Like rock and roll.
Rock and roll. It does. And first glance, this can sound like a great way to live life, but then go for it. Live your life like Camus and see how far it gets you. That's all I'm gonna say.
I think the good you can get from this book, other than just enjoying the writing, which I wish we had more time to spend on, but the real use of reading this is it is something that, at least for me, inspired me to think, okay, what are my real values if I have to define them? I want to have more of a solid ground, more of a lens to look at the world so I don't end up just in this kind of passivity, getting sucked into the void. I guess it's like some of the Bret Easton Ellis stuff we've read where it's, you know, not to reduce it down to a cautionary tale, but it gives you a blueprint of a life you can live, like the opposite of the one in the book, and you might be better off doing that.
It makes you want to take a step back and almost put your life on a trial and think, how has my actions benefited my life, or what could become of me now? Looking back on my life, what do I have to be proud of? What do I have to regret?
And I also think it's interesting, Camus built in people like us. I think he foresaw judging this book with the whole jury at the end in the trial. They're all judging Meursault. It seems so simple to them.
It's like the end of Seinfeld.
Yeah. And I think that that's fair and unfair because, yeah, there are a lot of people that would just judge Meursault and not really look at him, just want him to be executed, throw him away. But I think you can also look at his life fairly, his actions in this book, his thoughts, and make up for yourself, make up for your own mind. I think there's more to life than this. And that's what I hope people would get out of this book. And that's how it ended up being a life-affirming thing for me.
I think it was a great book. I'm glad we got to read it. It really was something new for me. I've never read a book like this. And this is a really short read, as you can see. I mean, real short here. So I suggest you pick it up and check it out. And thank you so much for watching. If you have some thoughts to share, some existentialist thoughts, please comment down below. We'd love to have a discussion with you. Please like this video if you enjoyed it or dislike it. And, you know, it really helps the algorithm for us. If you're watching here on YouTube, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a 5-star review and share it with your friends and family. And remember,
if a book is banned, it's worth reading.